Tonight, inside the deadly gun battle and hostage standoff at a Trader Joe's store in Los Angeles.
I heard screaming and gunfire and just knew I needed to find a way out.
The heroic actions that helped many escape. New concerns about your privacy after a rideshare driver filmed his passengers and broadcast the videos to the world. Should your pharmacist be allowed to refuse a prescription on moral or religious grounds? Two cases involving big pharmacy chains are under scrutiny tonight. A new app that reaches out to family and friends when someone's desperate for help. And the major league moment as a young cancer survivor, now a player himself, reconnects with his childhood hero.
This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. We begin tonight with new details in that deadly standoff that captivated the nation Saturday night. An armed man locked in a gun battle with police outside a Trader Joe's in Los Angeles, then holding hostages inside the busy store for 3 hours. Police were positioned outside and poised for action as TV news helicopters hovered overhead. Tonight, officials have identified the suspect and a store employee who was killed, though they aren't saying exactly how she died. And for the first time, we're hearing from the 70-year-old woman who says she was the first hostage released. NBC's Steve Patterson starts us off.
This is the suspect here.
This man at the center of the dramatic standoff that played out on live TV. Tonight, police identifying him as 28-year-old Gene Atkins, arrested on suspicion of murder. Killed in the chaos, 27-year-old Melly Corrado, a Trader Joe's employee. Her brother tweeting, "I'm sad to say she didn't make it. My baby sister, my world."
I heard a couple of gunshots close to my head.
Because of her age, Terry, who wouldn't give her last name, says she was the first hostage released.
He said, "I'm going to shoot these people one by one." And so I just sat there, with my palms up, facing up.
The rampage began hours earlier at this home. Atkins shooting his own grandmother multiple times, then pulling another woman into his car.
Hollywood's in pursuit.
He then led police on a chase through Hollywood, crashing into a pole outside the store, then taking aim in a gun battle with officers.
An officer needs help, Monroe and Hyperion, shots fired.
Shot in the arm and out of options, Atkins fled into the store, as many as 50 people inside.
My heart is still beating 100 miles an hour.
With tactical teams on the ground, guns drawn, police surrounded the store during an hours-long standoff.
Here's the rescue of the kids.
Negotiating the release of several hostages, rushing young children to safety in their arms.
It looks like they used the ladder to get out.
Some escaping from a second-story window.
So I just didn't want to wait there any longer.
Heroics from Trader Joe's employee Sean Jersey, using a ladder to save coworkers.
I heard screaming and gunfire and just knew I needed to find a way out.
The suspect surrendering without a fight, terrified hostages reunited with their loved ones.
And this morning, Trader Joe's releasing a statement calling the events of Saturday's standoff the saddest day in the history of the company. The store behind me remaining closed. Meanwhile, that grandmother, a woman in her 70s, remains in the hospital after undergoing surgery. Kate?
All right, Steve Patterson in Los Angeles, thank you. In Missouri, a vigil this afternoon for 17 people who died in that tour boat tragedy 3 days ago, as one man now says he called out design flaws that may have turned the boat into a death trap. We get the latest from NBC's Maya Rodriguez.
In a place that prides itself on family fun, today Branson, Missouri is facing its pain instead.
That's all we talk about. It's how sad and how everybody's hurting for these people that have lost so much.
At a memorial service Sunday afternoon, crowds mourn the 17 lives lost here on Thursday when a duck boat capsized and sank on Table Rock Lake during a severe storm.
My wife and I, we won't allow us or our children to get on those decks right now.
Stephen Paul is a St. Louis area private inspector. Last year, the current owners of the Ride the Ducks company hired him to inspect the vessels as they prepared to buy the business. In his report, he says he warned them that design flaws made the boats more susceptible to sinking and harder to escape in an emergency.
One issue is the canopy on the ducks, as well as the curtains that come down the sides. When the curtains are down, there's no way for the people to escape. It becomes a people catcher.
The owner of the duck boat company insists safety is their number one priority. Now investigators are hoping surveillance video recovered from the boat will shed more light into what happened.
We have some fairly sophisticated means to dry them out, retrieve the data that's on there before we have a chance to actually see what's on the video.
Clues in the search for answers as loved ones seek to understand what went wrong.
Not knowing what they went through in those last few minutes, it is horrific.
The Coast Guard said salvage operations will begin tomorrow at 9 a.m. to bring the boat back up from the bottom of the lake. It will then be taken to a secure facility for investigators. Kate?
So sad. Maya Rodriguez, thank you. Nearly a week after his one-on-one meeting with Vladimir Putin, President Trump gave one more glowing review of the summit today, but also found himself dealing with fallout from the Department of Justice's release of documents that authorized the wiretapping of a former Trump campaign advisor. White House correspondent Kelly O'Donnell has our report.
Gleeful tweeting from the president today, reliving his Helsinki handshake. I had a great meeting with Putin, but a new poll cast doubt. In the Washington Post ABC survey, 50% responded they disapprove of the president's handling of the Putin meeting. 33% approve, echoing harsh criticism from Democrats.
Well, I certainly think he's acting like someone who's compromised.
But today, the president seized on newly released documents, previously top secret, to claim a victory that is in dispute. Looking more and more like the Trump campaign for president was illegally spied upon. Not so fast, says Republican Marco Rubio.
I wouldn't consider that spying on a campaign.
At issue, Carter Page, one of the Trump campaign's foreign policy advisors. 400 released pages, heavily redacted, explain why investigators sought ongoing surveillance of Page, who the FBI called the subject of targeted recruitment by the Russian government. Today, Page pushed back.
I've never been an agent of the foreign power in any by any stretch of the imagination.
When pressed, Page said he likely did discuss U.S. sanctions in Russia in 2016.
It's a major economic issue. And so, you know, there may have been a loose conversation.
Lindsey Graham said the president's anger is justified.
The Carter Page warn is whether or not the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians. I haven't seen any evidence of it.
2 years after that court-approved wiretap surveillance, Carter Page has not been charged with any crime. This week, the president's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, goes on trial in the first of two criminal cases, first in Virginia, facing bank fraud and tax evasion charges not related to the campaign. For his part, the president is returning from New Jersey to Washington tonight. Kate?
All right, Kelly O'Donnell, thank you. The president of Iran issued a strong warning to President Trump today, saying that a military conflict with Iran would be the mother of all wars. President Hassan Rouhani's comments came 2 months after Mr. Trump withdrew the United States from the Iran nuclear deal, setting the stage for new sanctions against Iran. Rouhani warned the president, quote, "Don't play with the lion's tail. This would only lead to regret." In nearby Syria, they're known as the White Helmets, a group of Syrian aid workers who help civilians caught in the crossfire of that country's brutal civil war. Overnight, hundreds of them were evacuated out of the country as the Syrian government's expanding reach threatens their critical mission. But NBC's Matt Bradley reports now the daring rescue may spell trouble for those left behind.
In Syria's seemingly endless war, even the rescuers need rescuing. But last night was no ordinary relief effort. At the urging of the United States and European allies, Israel extracted more than 400 Syrian rescue workers and their families, grabbing the so-called white helmets from the jaws of Russian and Syrian regime forces bearing down on southern Syria. The white helmets entered Israel through the Golan Heights on foot, then were transferred by bus to Jordan, where they were waiting in refugee camps for resettlement to other countries. It was Israel's biggest intervention yet into Syria's seven-year-long war. Many who have survived have the white helmets to thank, volunteers famous for braving Syrian artillery to rescue civilians. Hundreds of volunteers have died, giving them a reputation for bravery. Celebrated in an Oscar-winning documentary in 2016.
The white helmets have their lives at stake here, essentially.
Emil Khan is a former British advisor to Syria's opposition.
They will be seen by people around them as being the colleagues of people helped by Israel. That's not going to be good for their reputation, but really at this point it's life or death.
Syria considers the white helmets terrorists and Israeli spies. Last night's rescue may have saved lives, but it came at a political cost. Matt Bradley, NBC News.
Back in this country, a heat emergency is building in the south and west. Some 73 million people from the Florida Panhandle through the southwest and all the way to California and Oregon are all under heat alerts. Triple-digit temperatures and record-breaking temps are forecast over the next several days. Another 10 million people are at risk for severe storms in parts of the northern plains and also in the southeast. Picture this. You think you're having a private conversation in the back of an Uber or Lyft car, but it turns out you're being recorded and the video streamed live online. That's exactly what happened to passengers in one Missouri rideshare car, raising new questions about how far your expectation of privacy extends. NBC's David Gura has more.
Yeah, we need some content, man. We haven't really had content, and like, it's been a couple of weeks since we've had like good content.
Tonight, a Missouri man is no longer driving for Uber and Lyft after he reportedly filmed hundreds of his passengers without their knowledge.
You haven't missed a thing.
The St. Louis Post-Dispatch has identified the man. Jason Gargak is 32, and the paper says he had thousands of followers on a streaming service watching his passengers in real time, including children and college students. He once gave a ride to the guitarist for the band Alice in Chains. Viewers posted comments, some of which were inappropriate. The driver tells the Post-Dispatch he's done nothing wrong. He says he had a sticker informing passengers they were being recorded. Experts say this may not have been illegal.
Even if it's morally questionable for a rideshare driver to live stream his passengers, there's probably nothing illegal about it, at least in Missouri. Missouri's a one-party consent state, and in addition, passengers of rideshare services probably don't have much of a reasonable expectation of privacy.
NBC News has not been able to reach Gargak, and his profile on Twitch, the streaming service he used, has disappeared. David Gura, NBC News.
Another controversial issue getting attention tonight, pharmacists who deny prescriptions to some patients because of moral and religious reasons. It's being highlighted by two cases now in Arizona involving the country's biggest pharmacy chains. NBC's Blake McCoy has been looking into that.
Nicole Ortega faced a heart-wrenching moment. Her doctor said her 10-week-old fetus had stopped developing and her pregnancy would have to end.
It's hard when you find out that you're not going to have a baby anymore. Sorry, I don't want to.
When she went to fill a prescription to end the pregnancy, the Walgreens pharmacist in Peoria, Arizona, refused.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, I thought he was kidding. Like, I don't have control over it. It's not something that, you know, I want my body to do.
It turns out Arizona is one of seven states that expressly allow pharmacists to deny filling a prescription on moral or religious grounds. Another case in Arizona made headlines last week when a CVS pharmacist refused to fill a transgender woman's prescription for hormone therapy. She wrote, "Embarrassed and distressed, I nearly started crying in the middle of the store." The pharmacist went even further, according to her account, refusing to hand the prescription back so she could take it elsewhere.
I think we have to remember this is healthcare, right? And we shouldn't be denied healthcare because of who we are.
CVS and Walgreens, the nation's largest pharmacy chains, have policies requiring the denied prescription to be passed on to another pharmacist for fulfillment. That's what happened at Walgreens. It didn't at CVS. CVS says it fired the pharmacist. Even though Ortega's prescription was eventually filled, she wants laws changed and says the experience brought added pain.
I think what happened is wrong.
To an already difficult situation.
So, Blake, are there limits in those seven states on what pharmacists can say no to?
Well, Kate, it varies state by state. The clauses initially popped up in response to Roe v. Wade and abortion, a religious exemption. But there has recently been a push by social conservatives to add morality exemptions to cover things like gender reassignment, even vaccinations.
Blake McCoy, thank you. Still ahead tonight, a new way to call for help, a digital panic button to alert others that things are not okay. Also, a spectacular day in space, the groundbreaking mission that lit up the night sky. We're back with a new app that gives people the power to reach out for help when they're struggling with a mental health issue like anxiety or depression. It's aptly named Not Okay, and it was invented by a brother and sister who wanted to give others a lifeline.
For the Lucas family, happy moments like these are treasured. Just last year, their daughter Hannah was in a much different place. Because of a medical condition, she has fainting spells, and kids at school were making fun of her.
I didn't realize that the bullying had gotten so out of hand until the spring. You know, she just sort of kept it all to herself because she finally told me she didn't want to be a burden.
Hannah had anxiety and fell into a deep depression. And then one night, Hannah's mom, Robin, had a feeling something was wrong and snuck up to Hannah's room.
I look at her and she has a handful of my husband's blood pressure pills and she's putting them in her mouth.
It was at that lowest moment in my life where I just wished that I had a button that I could press to immediately alert my friends and even my family members that, hey, I'm not okay.
That dark moment led to a bright idea. Hannah enlisted her younger brother, Charlie, to design an app.
I just felt completely helpless during this entire situation.
The siblings invented the app Not Okay, a digital panic button. Hannah shows us how it works. When someone is feeling not okay, they can press a button and the app sends a text message to up to 5 pre-selected close contacts along with her current GPS location.
There is a comfort level with social media, with mobile devices. So putting a resource for getting in touch with people that you care about and that care about you in that space, I think could help a lot for with a lot of different conditions.
Hannah is on the mend.
Hey guys, Hannah here, and welcome to the 5th day of Minority Mental Health Awareness Month.
She and her brother now create inspirational videos on mental health, encouraging other young people that it's okay to be not okay. They even got a shout out from Beyonce's sister Solange Knowles.
That was honestly the coolest thing in the world for me.
And while she still deals with fainting spells and depression, Hannah says creating the app has given her darkest moment a different meaning.
The beauty for my ashes, because all last year was just so much pain. And now it's like I'm living my dream. It's so cool.
You can imagine how many people might need that. If you'd like to check out Hannah's app, it is available for both Apple and Android phones. And when we come back, the frightening scenes at a California State Fair as the monorail catches fire. Also, the unusual bond that brought these boys of summer back together. The scene early this morning at Cape Canaveral, Florida, the newest version of SpaceX's Falcon 9 rocket blasting off for only the second time. The reusable part of the rocket came back to Earth less than 9 minutes later, landing on a ship off the Florida coast. It took a while longer for the rocket to deliver a communication satellite 22,000 miles above the equator. Some scary moments this weekend at the California State Fair in Sacramento when an electrical short circuit on the monorail caused a fire, sending sparks raining down to the ground. The fire was confined to one car only, and the operator was the only one on the train at the time. There were no injuries. There's probably only one boy in the world who gets his birthday photo seen by tens of millions. You know who that is. Prince George turned 5 today, and his parents, Prince William and Kate Middleton, released that photograph of George taken 2 weeks ago after the christening of his baby brother, Prince Louis. When we come back, a story about the bonds of baseball you won't want to miss. Finally tonight, from childhood hero to clubhouse colleague, the story of a young cancer survivor who turned his dreams of baseball into a reality and got to thank his favorite player for helping him through his toughest challenge. Here's NBC's Joe Fryer.
As a minor league pitcher, Devin Smeltzer has faced plenty of tough opponents. But his fiercest foe stepped to the plate when Devin was just 9. He was diagnosed at a stunningly young age with prostate and bladder cancer.
Early on, I was very, very angry and ornery and why me? And it was very tough at first.
Doctors treated his cancer with chemo and radiation. But for his mind, the cure was baseball.
As a kid, how much did you love baseball?
I loved it before I was sick, but once I had gotten sick, it was my only way of being a kid.
A fan of the Philadelphia Phillies, Devin never forgot this moment when he got an autograph from his favorite player, Chase Utley.
The best part about that was he talked to me like another ball player, not like a kid who was sick.
Today, that kid pitches for the Tulsa Drillers, double-A team for the L.A. Dodgers. The very club Chase Utley now plays for.
What are the odds that you'd be in the same organization as Chase?
Slim to none, I can say that.
The veteran second baseman had no idea what impact he had on that young boy a decade ago.
And this is Devin. Come here, Devin.
Until the day Devin paid a visit to Chase's big league clubhouse.
I just wanted to come and thank you for everything you did, and it means a lot.
The kid threw his hero a curve.
Thank you.
10 years later, to have one of those kids walk into the clubhouse and tell his story was pretty surreal.
What did that moment mean to you?
Oh, it meant the world.
Devin, let's take a picture.
Yeah, definitely, cool, please. Yeah.
For
please.
Utley, who just announced he's retiring at season's end, it's a career highlight off the field. Joe Fryer, NBC News, Tulsa.
Great story. That is NBC Nightly News on a Sunday night. Lester Holt will be back with you tomorrow. I'm Kate Snow. For all of us here at NBC News, have a great night.